Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 7.
Certain humans like to lament about how aloof cats are, like that's something bad. And just because cats seem disinterested doesn't mean our brains are all catawampus. I have better ideas on how to get my way than anyone would ever give me credit for. If I've got a complaint, I meow loudly at Randall, the father of my twin humans. He'll do anything to shut me up. When I holler from the kitchen, it means my water dish is empty or has something disgusting floating in it which I don't care to drink around. Nighttime yowls are a signal I'm trapped in the twins' bedroom where I could potentially create chaos unless he frees me. It took Randall more time than I would have imagined to figure out he should leave the door to the twins' bedroom cracked open when they drift off to dreamland. I'll be the first to admit I like to sleep around. As much as I adore my twins, I don't care to spend the entire night with them. These little darlings have turned me into the subject of a nightly tug of war. Their fights over which bed I'm to sleep on are raucous even by a cat's standards. At one point, they pushed their beds together and stretched me out in the middle. I kept sinking into the crack between them, which didn't please me in the least. Finally, they came up with the brilliant idea to have me switch beds each night. The cat-sharing plan then led to a brawl over which one would get the most nights during the first week of the arrangement. The trouble doesn't end even when bedtime goes off without a hitch. I can't blame the twins for finding me irresistible, but they both employ a suffocating, death-like grip on me while they're sleeping. My exit strategy is to wiggle out after they drift off, then caterwaul at the door until Randall comes to let me out. The twins are blissfully unaware of my departure. They could sleep through a typhoon. Besides knowing who to befriend, I'm also keenly aware of who to steer clear of. In the case of Moon McKenna, the mother of my twins, it's best to not be seen or heard. As long as I don't cross Moon, I've got free run of the house at Gecko's Gulch.
Chapter 7. Moon McKenna.
Life is a bitch, and then you die. I always thought that saying was for losers and lamoids. Then I met the women from Zion Flats. Dying is actually the good part. Of course, polygamous theology dictates these unfortunates will still be hitched to each other in heaven whether they like it or not. The only relief they get is knowing the randy old goat they jointly married won't be able to keep knocking them up in heaven. I've had my fill of pregnancy, two girls in the same junket. My daughters bring me the greatest joy, but they decimated my boobs and shredded my uterus. The twins turn 6 in August, which means they'll be in school full-time next year. Hallelujah! I logged countless miles on my new SUV taking them to kindergarten last year. My husband, Randall, was in beauty college, so I got stuck with all the driving. Now that Randall has opened a salon in Naval, he'll be able to take the girls in the morning. I was glad when my sister, Blue, decided to spend the summer at Gecko's Gulch. She helps a lot with the twins, especially when I'm busy in the lab at Good Karma. Blue brought along her stepson Brandon and his friend Taj. So far, they don't seem to be much of a problem, or at least not that I'm aware of. My rule of being a good guest is this: don't do anything so egregious that it comes to my attention. There's enough trouble burbling in this part of Utah without a couple of teenagers touching off the Third World War. All polygamists are not created equal, but when one group goes down, everyone lives in fear. Scared people do scary things. The polygamists from Zion Flats are not related to the ones ruled by Warren Jeffs, the big plague from Colorado City, but they are equally dangerous. When the feds finally caught up to Warren, everyone in Zion Flats got real nervous. The religious doctrine of arranged marriages between teenage girls and dirty old men was suddenly on trial for the whole world to see. Nephi Stratton, the prophet of Zion Flats, began acting on his own paranoia in some very disconcerting ways. I know a lot about what is happening in the despicable slum they call Zion Flats because I hire a number of women who live there. With the economy crashing nationwide, I could just as easily employ workers from Naval and save myself all the headaches of dealing with Nephi. Instead, I've started a crusade of sorts, trying to help these girls in whatever small way I can. All of them are on food stamps, but this doesn't translate into proper nutrition. I have it on good authority that all welfare benefits are turned into Nephi to distribute as he sees fit. Working at Good Karma is considered a privilege, even though these women never see a dime of what they earn. And while this doesn't make their bottom line any better, I can at least provide them with healthy food and a positive atmosphere to be in for a few hours a day. I pay in cash directly to Nephi, who uses the money to keep everyone in Zion Flats despondent at all times. Nephi and I had a big showdown a few months ago when I got fed up with the parade of young girls he was moving through my skincare company. Every time one of those gloomy sex slaves got pregnant, I had to train someone new. The situation was needlessly costing me time and money. Eventually, Nephi agreed to send over a group of women who were too old to bake buns in their beleaguered ovens. The state of Utah is well aware of the wretched conditions in Zion Flats, yet fails to do anything about it. My theory is these officials are secretly hoping to practice polygamy in the afterlife. While they shun plural marriage on Earth, many of them subscribe to the idea of a celestial kingdom whereby polygamy is the payoff for good behavior. Polygamy was outlawed in Naval in 1937. Those of Nephi's ilk left Naval and established Zion Flats, a place where they could impregnate underage girls in private. Against my better judgment, I've tried to help some of these victims. To date, springing Isla Rae Stratton from that communal swamp has been my greatest success. Isla Rae was barely an adolescent when she started working at Good Karma. She kept showing up with bruises on her face. Back then, I was still taking my employees to the Diamonds in the Desert Casino on the weekends to sell products in their convention center. I complained to Nephi about the state of Isla Rae's looks, hoping if I mentioned I couldn't have abuse victims selling my lotions to the public, he'd stop the violence. Nephi agreed to change his tactic, sending Isla Rae over with whip marks on her back so deep the blood was seeping through the repugnant, floor-length dress they make all the women from Zion Flats wear. That was the straw that broke the polygamist girl's back. I made arrangements to sneak Isla Rae out of Zion Flats. I got a skitsy shock jock named Nancy Neptune to raise the money needed to buy Isla Rae's freedom from Nephi. Neptune went along with the plan, thinking it would make for interesting late-night radio chatter. Getting Isla Rae away from that heartless troll Nephi was worth getting arrested over. Nephi dropped the charges against me once he had the ransom money raised by Neptune in his grubby little hand. I thought for sure Nephi would pull the plug on letting other women work at Good Karma. He must have liked the extra income because they kept showing up long after Isla Ray had moved into a private suite at the Diamonds in the Desert Casino with another Zion Flats escapee named Meredith Andrews. Life in southern Utah rolled on. The elite group of menopausal hostages from Zion Flats formed a nice camaraderie. Since they don't have access to their own food stamps, I begin each workday with a continental breakfast and a dinner-worthy spread at noon. Mealtimes at Gecko's Gulch have become a rare source of joy for these poor women. Sometimes, one of them even cracks a smile. I guess word got back to Nephi because a few months ago, he sent over Orinda, his tragically unattractive sister, to be our new cook. Orinda performs all right in the kitchen, but she is crabby as all get out. Her purpose in being here isn't to provide us all with healthy meals. Orinda's job is to rat out any worker who isn't hating life on a lethal level. Hang tight, kiddies. We'll be back in a scratch. In the mood for a killer audiobook? Quirky Killers by Adele Park is the story of a serial bride who sends her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Too bad the cops don't see the humor in this and arrest this woman who is just trying to make sure everyone gets to meet God. Quirky Killers. Get it today on audible.com. You'll die laughing.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio. Orinda is also in charge of a shadowy waif named Evangeline. Orinda and Evangeline's mother got duped into marrying an outsider who was on the run from the law. Nicholas DeLuca came from a mob family and was wanted on a number of charges. When the feds tried to close in on Nicholas, he hid out at Juniper Hollow, an old estate sandwiched between Zion Flats and a huge swath of BLM land. Somehow, Nicholas managed to con his way into the good graces of Nephi. In all likelihood, he's the one who helped Nephi refine the welfare scam at Zion Flats. Nephi, always suspicious of outsiders, got Nicholas to marry Orinda as a way of keeping tabs on things at Juniper Hollow. Nicholas was a good-looking man. Tying the knot with Orinda, the bearded lady from the Zion Flats Circus, must have taken some grit. It's hard to tell how close those two were. Unlike most polygamist wives, Orinda never got pregnant. Nicholas also married Rebecca Simmons, Evangeline's mother. I've heard through various sources that Rebecca miscarried a number of other children. The women from Zion Flats have their babies at home, so the whole delivery process is a crapshoot. Further complicating Rebecca's situation was a rumor that she'd been futzing around with belladonna, a hallucinogenic plant that grows wild in this part of southern Utah. A few weeks after my sister's winter wedding, the Naval Weekly Banner was all abuzz with the story of Rebecca's death. Rebecca supposedly jumped off the widow's walk at Juniper Hollow after a gory fight with Nicholas. The word coming from Zion Flats was that Nicholas had a dust-up with Nephi and decided to make like a Catholic and pull out. The blood splatters found in the house at Juniper Hollow told a different story. Too bad the evidence was destroyed before anyone could find out what happened. The residents from Zion Flats don't like outside interference. Under normal circumstances, the news of Rebecca's death would have been treated like insider information. In this situation, however, Evangeline blew their cover by running away the night Rebecca died. She was found battered and barefoot by a man named Boyd Fletcher. Boyd is an old-timer from Naval who owns a hunting cabin on Granite Ridge, a picturesque spot overlooking Juniper Hollow. The Fletchers were the original owners of both properties. They built what was once a magnificent country estate at Juniper Hollow. Somehow, Boyd's grandfather got mixed up with the mob from Las Vegas, distilling bootleg hooch in the caves underneath Granite Ridge. At some point, the operation went belly up. For unknown reasons, the family was forced to turn Juniper Hollow over to the DeLucas. On the night Rebecca died, little Evangeline was somehow able to climb to the top of Granite Ridge with no shoes on. Boyd found her wandering around and called the cops. When the police took Evangeline back to Juniper Hollow, they found blood inside the house and Rebecca's lifeless body on the ground outside. Orinda told the police Rebecca was addicted to belladonna and had jumped to her death on purpose. Rebecca's tongue was stained purple, an indicator that she had been ingesting belladonna berries. Orinda, sweetheart that she is, had dragged Rebecca's body away from the spot where she landed, thus disrupting what was most likely a crime scene. Incredibly, Evangeline was placed in Orinda's care. The cops in Naval don't get any sort of cooperation when it comes to dealing with people from Zion Flats, so they act like whatever is happening out there is no big deal. Just to make sure the shoddy police work in Naval didn't capture the attention of the feds, the house at Juniper Hollow was mysteriously set on fire. The flames were so hot, nothing was left in its wake but a few stone pillars. By the time the fire department in Naval got tipped off, one of the goons from Zion Flats had opened the diversion pipe on the lake out there and flooded the whole scene. Boyd Fletcher took obvious pleasure in the wreckage at Juniper Hollow, turning the hunting cabin on Granite Ridge into his permanent home. By all accounts, Boyd is a snappy old gaffer who gives Nephi Stratton a run for the money when it comes to being rude. Boyd's wife had died in some kind of crazy accident, so he had no reason to stick around in Naval. He reminds me of the Grinch, perched on his lonely overlook, sending out vibes of ill will. The polygamists and the mob have finally cleared out from Juniper Hollow, but Boyd is still festering with resentment. I wish I could fix Boyd up with Orinda. They'd be perfect together. Orinda is now my problem because Nephi wants her to spy on the workers at Good Karma. The fact that these women are finally getting enough to eat and have a safe place to gather makes Nephi extremely uptight. I'm glad Orinda feeds herself in the kitchen. Nothing can dampen an appetite quite like an angry, hairy old bat swooping in to poop all over everyone's good mood. Evangeline doesn't join us at the table, nor does Rondi, the housekeeper. These two literally get everyone else's sloppy seconds. Not my choice, mind you. To keep the peace with Orinda, I let her have control over the food service, or, in the case of Evangeline and Rondi, disservice. Evangeline is a year younger than my twins. Their numerous attempts to get Evangeline to play with them have failed miserably. Not that Orinda would ever allow that anyway. It really singes me to watch this young child treated like a scullery maid. It's not like she's of much use to begin with. She's only 5 years old, for heaven's sake. Evangeline engages in some rather creepy behavior. She's a lot like Skitters, furtively appearing in places where you least expect her. Sometimes I'll be at my desk in the lab, sensing I see Evangeline prowling around in the courtyard. When I look again, there's nothing there. Once, I found Evangeline crouched under the vanity in the lab restroom. The lights were off, and I wasn't expecting anyone to be in there. It startled me so much I let out a scream. Despite the fact that the sun shines more than 300 days a year here, Evangeline has super white skin. It's almost translucent. Sporting opaque eyes and hair the color of bleached flour doesn't help her corpse-like appearance. Evangeline rarely ever talks. When she does, her voice comes out in a raspy, sing-songy whisper. She's like a glummer version of Moaning Myrtle from Harry Potter. My heart goes out to this shattered child. Orinda brings Evangeline to Gecko's Gulch every day. She's supposed to help Rondi with the cleaning. Like most five-year-olds, this doesn't last very long, even when it's a simple task like taking the sheets off the bed. Rondi actually seems relieved when Evangeline wanders off. Orinda could care less what she does, as long as it doesn't involve her. My husband, Randall, keeps insisting I do something about this situation, yet he's way too busy to help. I thought I would get a little breather once Randall finished beauty school. What I got instead was a second mortgage. Rather than easing into his new career, Randall went bananas and bought an expensive Victorian mansion, which he converted into the best little hair house in Naval. Seriously, that's the name of his new salon. All of this was in response to a snit Randall got into with the owners of the Second Combing Beauty Parlor. As head of the Naval Days beauty pageant, Randall was courted by every salon in town while he was still in school. During an interview to be the manager of the Second Combing, Randall foolishly blabbed his ideas for increasing business. Randall envisioned turning the Second Combing into an exclusive, upper-end establishment where each stylist had their own private suite. Music and lighting would be subdued, and clients would receive celebrity-style pampering. The Second Combing loved Randall's ideas, but not his salary requirements. Before the ink even dried on Randall's hair license, the Second Combing had a new look and a new manager. These people obviously didn't know who they were dealing with. Needing a fresh idea, Randall forked over what was left of our savings, promising to finance the remodeling of the Victorian house once Blue's husband paid him for the property at Legacy Grove. Since Randall's understated elegance idea was already being used across town at the Second Combing, he decided to go whole hog and open the rootinous tootinous salon this side of the Rockies. He kept the individual rooms intact, decorating each one in a style best described as Western brothel. Randall then staged a revolt at the Second Combing, filching some of their top stylists. The Second Combing retaliated by showing up at city zoning meetings to object to Randall's renovations. Even more aggravating, these backbiters are now trying to snatch away Randall's job as head of the Naval Days beauty pageant. If the Second Combing continues haranguing Randall, they'll no doubt get what they deserve. Randall was a member of the gay mafia before we got married. This group takes down haters just for sport. I can't wait to see what they do to the pious hair shaggers at the Second Combing beauty parlor. What happens when cosmetics and polygamy collide? Find out in Quirky Killers by Adele Park. Take a trip to quirky polygamist country, where one of the local brides is just itching to get her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Quirky Killers, get it today on audible.com. You'll die laughing.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.